File 67.
I. And thus the court Jew slowly developed into the national Jew. But naturally, he still remained associated with persons in higher quarters, and he even attempted to push his way further into the inner circles of the ruling set. But at the same time, some other representatives of his race were currying favour with the people. If we remember the crimes the Jew had committed against the masses of the people in the course of so many centuries, how repeatedly and ruthlessly he exploited them, and how he sucked out even the very marrow of their substance. And when we further remember how they gradually came to hate him, and finally considered him as a public scourge, then we may well understand how difficult the Jew must have found this final transformation. Yes, indeed, it must tax all their powers to be able to present themselves as friends of humanity to the poor victims whom they have skinned raw. Therefore, the Jew began by making public amends for the crimes he had committed against the people in the past. He started his metamorphosis by first appearing as the benefactor of humanity. Since his new philanthropic policy had a very concrete aim in view, he could not very well apply to himself the biblical counsel not to allow the left hand to know what the right hand is giving. He felt obliged to let as many people as possible know how deeply the sufferings of the masses grieved him, and to what excesses of personal sacrifice he was ready to go in order to help them. With this manifestation of innate modesty, so typical of the Jew, he trumpeted his virtues before the world, until finally the world actually began to believe him. Those who refused to share this belief were considered to be doing him an injustice. Thus, after a little while, he began to twist things around, so as to make it appear that it was he who had always been wronged, and vice versa. There were really some particularly foolish people who could not help pitying this poor unfortunate creature of a Jew. Attention may be called to the fact that in spite of his proclaimed readiness to make personal sacrifices, the Jew never becomes poor thereby. He has a happy knack of always making both ends meet. Occasionally his benevolence might be compared to the manure which is not spread over the field merely for the purpose of getting rid of it, but rather with a view to future produce. Anyhow, after a comparatively short period of time, the world was given to know that the Jew had become a general benefactor and philanthropist. What a transformation! What is looked upon as more or less natural when done by other people here became an object of astonishment, and even sometimes of admiration, because it was considered so unusual in a Jew. That is why he has received more credit for his acts of benevolence than ordinary mortals. And something more. The Jew became liberal all of a sudden, and began to talk enthusiastically of how human progress must be encouraged. Gradually he assumed the air of being the herald of a new age. Yet at the same time he continued to undermine the groundwork of that part of the economic system in which people have the most practical interest. He bought up stock in the various national undertakings, and thus pushed his influence into the circuit of national production, making this latter an object of buying and selling on the stock exchange, or rather what might be called the pawn in a financial game of chess, and thus ruining the basis on which personal proprietorship alone is possible. Only with the entrance of the Jew did that feeling of estrangement between employers and employees begin, which led at a later date to the political class struggle. Finally, the Jew gained an increasing influence in all economic undertakings by means of his predominance in the stock exchange. If not the ownership, at least he secured control of the working power of the nation. In order to strengthen his political position, he directed his efforts towards removing the barrier of racial and civic discrimination, which had hitherto hindered his advance at every turn. With characteristic tenacity, he championed the cause of religious tolerance for this purpose, and in the Freemason organization, which had fallen completely into his hands, he found a magnificent weapon which helped him to achieve his ends. Government circles, as well as the higher sections of the political and commercial bourgeoisie, fell a prey to his plans through his manipulation of the Masonic net, though they themselves did not even suspect what was happening. Only the people as such, or rather the masses which were just becoming conscious of their own power, and were beginning to use it in the fight for their rights and liberties, had hitherto escaped the grip of the Jew. At least his influence had not yet penetrated to the deeper and wider sections of the people. This was unsatisfactory to him. The most important phase of his policy was therefore to secure control over the people. The Jew realized that in his efforts to reach the position of public despot, he would need a peacemaker. And he thought he could find a peacemaker if he could whip in sufficient extensive sections of the bourgeois. But the Freemasons failed to catch the glove manufacturers and the linen weavers in the frail meshes of their net. And so it became necessary to find a grosser, and withal a more effective, means. Thus another weapon beside that of the Freemasonry would have to be secured. This was the press. The Jew exercised all his skill and tenacity in getting hold of it. By means of the press, he began gradually to control public life in its entirety. He began to drive it along the road which he had chosen to reach his own ends, for he was now in a position to create and direct that force which, under the name of public opinion, is better known today than it was some decades ago. Simultaneously, the Jew gave himself the air of thirsting after knowledge. He lauded every phase of progress, particularly those phases which led to the ruin of others. For he judges all progress and development from the standpoint of the advantages which these bring to his own people. When it brings him no such advantages, he is the deadly enemy of enlightenment and hates all culture which is real culture as such. All the knowledge which he acquires in the schools of others is exploited by him exclusively in the service of his own race. Even more watchfully than ever before, he now stood guard over his Jewish nationality. Though bubbling over with enlightenment, progress, liberty, humanity, etc., his first care was to preserve the racial integrity of his own people. He occasionally bestowed one of his female members on an influential Christian, but the racial stock of his male descendants was always preserved unmixed, fundamentally. He poisons the blood of others, but preserves his own blood unadulterated. The Jew scarcely ever marries a Christian girl, but the Christian takes a Jewess to wife. The mongrels that are a result of this latter union always declare themselves on the Jewish side. Thus, a part of the higher nobility in particular became completely degenerate. The Jew was well aware of this fact, and systematically used this means of disarming the intellectual leaders of the opposite race. To mask his tactics and fool his victims, he talks of the equality of all men, no matter what their race or colour may be. And the simpletons began to believe him. Since his whole nature still retains too foreign an odour for the broad masses of the people to allow themselves to be caught in his snare, he uses the press to put before the public a picture of himself which is entirely untrue to life, but well designed to serve his purpose. In the comic papers, special efforts are made to represent the Jews as an inoffensive little race, which, like all others, has its peculiarities. In spite of their manners, which may seem a bit strange, the comic papers present the Jews as fundamentally good-hearted and honourable. Attempts are generally made to make them appear insignificant rather than dangerous. During this phase of his progress, the chief goal of the Jew was the victory of democracy, or rather the supreme hegemony of the parliamentary system, which embodies his concept of democracy. This institution harmonizes best with his purposes, for thus the personal element is eliminated, and in its place we have the dunder-headed majority, inefficiency, and, last but by no means least, knavery. The final result must necessarily have been the overthrow of the monarchy, which had to happen sooner or later.